Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, I hope you're well. There was so much illness over the winter holidays, and I know many of you will have experienced the same. We are still moving through an incredibly charged moment in time on Earth, so do take time to acknowledge that. Seek the people, pastimes, and places which make you feel whole. Whatever feels right for you at this time, honour the truth of that. This episode is one which I recorded some time ago. Our guest had suffered illness, and alongside modern medicine, he had begun to involve shamanic approaches in his quest to return to full health. Thankfully, he did recover, and during that process, he discovered a deep resonance with chanting, which led to an extraordinary experience. Later, on a trip to Iceland, he encountered a couple who showed up out of the blue and disappeared just as curiously. He has always felt that they were not of this world. Many other people, some previous guests, have described meeting people who are not quite human, and I'm very interested in these sorts of experiences. It puts me in mind of the Men in Black type scenarios that we hear about. Sometimes the skin of the being does not look human, sometimes there's a very odd scent, but most of all it is the behaviour that is extremely odd and just the sense that they are not what they appear to be. So do write and let me know if you have a story to tell. In the bonus episode of my chat with researcher Paul Sinclair, which is available on Patreon, I share Paul's experience of meeting with a very strange person who appeared to be doing a terrible job of acting as a human being. It's an incredibly interesting encounter, and it features in Paul's first Truth Proof book. At the end of this episode, I share a first-hand submission from the Fairy Investigation Society's census, and it came in from a hiker who had reported a similar sense of knowing when a group of strange people he met appeared and disappeared at the top of a mountain. The bonus for this episode features a third encounter from our guest, and that's available on Patreon, along with a treasure box of exclusive bonus content and lots of other treats. Thanks very much to the Curious Crew for supporting the show, which would not exist without them. And a warm welcome to Cheryl, Keziah, and Zachary. We look forward to welcoming many more of you. We have an upcoming exclusive Patreon Qigong course in late January and other fun things lined up for this year. The show notes are at scarletofthefae.com and you can contact me there too. If you have contacted me and I haven't got back to you, please give me another nudge because I am just so overwhelmed with work and life and family, and sometimes I do forget to get back to people, so I would appreciate it if you drop me another line. Thank you. Enjoy the episode.
The things that, as an adult, and I'll pick three. And I think that they've changed me, and they've augmented my belief that there is, you know, other dimensions other than what we, you know, what we're experiencing here. Before it was all, growing up, when I became an adult, I sort of put those experiences, childhood experiences, in the back, maybe subconsciously thinking, well, you know, it didn't happen the way I thought, or, you know, just kind of not, as you said, not honoring it. Anyway, what happened was I had just got my diploma fresh and from law school. And my wife and I went to the West Coast. Everything was good. We moved to a place right across the bridge from Portland, and I would, you know, go to Portland and practice, and then jumping all around in those days. But anyway, what happened? I got cancer, okay, which was a devastating experience for me, and like everybody who gets it. And I won't go into all that, but it would just hit me right out of the blue because, you know, I was, you know, very, very healthy, and, you know, I just wasn't something that you would expect. But anyway, I at the time, it was squamous cell cancer of the throat. And I did the traditional treatment. And I also, because I was starting to, you know, the West Coast in those days, and we're going back to 1991. Mm. In those days, it was, you know, it probably still is, but it was a lot freer with exchange of ideas and cultures than, especially spiritual cultures, than the East Coast. Mm. East Coast was very rigid in some areas. But in any event, so I opted for both traditional treatment and, you know, and I did other things as well. And one of the other things, and this brings me to the story, the first one was I became very interested in a Celtic shaman. So I contacted him, not even knowing if he would call me back, and I was able to reach him. And, you know, I told him about what was going on, and I would, you know, be interested in healing. Mm. Well, he said, you know, he would be open to that, because he does work in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, but he suggested that I set up a seminar to offset the cost of him coming out. So I did. He came out for the seminar and stayed at our home. And but he had I'll just tell you this real quickly. He had a very interesting experience in the morning. He shared this with us. He said that there was we had 5 acres. And it was gorgeous. You could see the Columbia River Gorge in the front, you know, far off. But so he said, I had a dream, and he said, I saw a land white, WIGHT, a land spirit on our property. And he described it as a humanoid, but it was a spidery looking thing. It was kind of like a wretched looking thing. Mm. But but he said it was carrying a big feather. So he said, I know that sounds crazy, but he said, I grabbed hold of the feather and we started tugging on it. You know, he was pulling his, I know. And my wife is there, you know, she's not as open as I was to stuff. And it's like, But anyway, so he said, finally, it pulled it out of my hand. And that was as it was traveling over to the side of your property. He said, you know, who are you? And it responded, I live here. But I just wanted to mention that. But
yeah.
Anyway, so we had the workshop, and I mean, I all went out. I got an elk skin. It was like a poncho, cut the whole, I mean, really, really was fit because it was Celtic shamanism. And it was fun, but at the same time, you know, I was looking for answers. You know, he told us how to journey and everything. And so anyway, during the workshop, he came up to me and looked me right in the face. It was very, you know, like an authentic person kind of a thing. And he said, the spirits of the East want to contact you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, and so anyway, we did the workshop and everything like that, and everyone left. It was really a great workshop. And, you know, so the next, you know, we had a chat that evening about it and everything. And so the next morning he had to catch a plane. So anyway, it was the winter. So thing is that he got caught in a terrible snowstorm in Portland after he left our house and had to stay around a couple of days. We didn't see him because we had like 4 feet of snow.
Oh gosh.
But anyway, but this is the thing. So on the last, I think it was the last day before he left, I had a very unusual experience. Now, I set up the Cairn of Rocks and everything because I wanted to do the journey, contact the spirits of the East. Mm. So I did. And at the time, my wife and my daughter, they left for shopping. Now, you have to understand, and this is important to the story, you have to understand, we were remote, even though it was right. It was just, you know, right canvases right across the bridge. It was still very remote. And the community we lived in, I mean, there weren't any other houses around. I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know, 20 acres away on one side, 20 acres away on the other side. And so it was very, very quiet. And we didn't have a lot of gadgets running or anything like that. So anyway, what I did, I set up the cairn of, you know, the rocks and all that. I did my, what I was supposed to do as far as my, you know, my, what I'm supposed to vocalize and all. And then something very, very strange happened. As I was doing this vocalization, I have no idea why I did this to this day, but I deviated from the teaching and I started chanting a rune. And the rune I started chanting was Uru's. Okay. So anyway, I started chanting this very, very, you know, and all of a sudden a thought came in my mind that, hey, you don't have the elk skin that you wore during the workshop, as crazy as it sounds, right?
Yeah.
So check, listen to this. So then I thought, oh, okay. Now I had created the circle that he taught us and everything. It was a lot. It was, you know, it took about, I'd say 10 minutes to set up. So, and I was aware that, you know, you don't break circles and come back, you know. So anyway, but I got up and Joe, I went to the, to a bedroom where we kept one of the bedrooms. We kept the, I had the elk skin and some other things. It was on the eastern side of the house, number one. So I, as I opened the door, I heard a woman's voice humming to me, humming.
Yeah.
I mean, it was about, she was about, I'd say 3 feet, three and a half feet away, or the voice, or there was nothing there except blank space. But it's, it, and then it was the same rhythm as my vocalization.
Right.
Like
yeah.
She was into it. She was humming in the same cadence. So, yeah. So anyway, it lasted maybe like 10 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. And then that was it. And if someone would have told me I would have had that experience, I would have hurt myself running out of that house. I mean, I'm a brave guy, but that would have, you know, that would have. But you know what? For some reason, and I, you know, I've been speculating for years why, you know what. But I had a sense of calm, like a sense of safety.
Yeah.
And you know, the other strange thing is I thought, I mean, if somebody had told me something like that would happen, I would have probably set up an altar or set up all, you know, done something, you know, to the room, but I didn't. And I just, and it just shocked me. So anyway, but I just stood there like waiting for the next thing to kick in, like the rational explanation. And it didn't, it just ended. So I walked away like dumbstruck. And I called, and after I told him what happened, there was a pregnant pause, and he said it was a gift. And I said, "Well, what is the gift?" What? And he said, "You're going to have to, you know, find out. It'll unfold." So anyway, I went back and forth with thinking, you know, reading a lot of different things and thinking it could be this, it could be that. But years later, I accidentally came across, or I shouldn't say accidentally, I just came across a passage of Yeats, of his writings about about the gentry, what he called the gentry.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, and this one passage made my almost hair stand up on the back of my neck. He said, the old folks around here, or the people, you know, who've lived here a long time, talk about the gentry when they sing. He says, they said they don't sing, they hum. And that blew my mind. That absolutely blew my mind. So to this day, I think it was something that he brought with him, because this is he's a very powerful shaman. Either he brought it with him, or he evoked it somehow through his being with us. And I think it was some, you know, one of the fae.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was your experience. I would own that. That was created within your own consciousness. You know, I would recognize that it's within your consciousness that occurred. And so that experience belongs to you.
Yeah.
That powerful moment where you read something or someone says something and it just rings true. You just know that this is something to do with the experience that you've had, you know, finding that passage by Yeats. Did you get any kind of life shift after that at all? I mean, because you were going through medical treatment.
Here's the interesting, you know, one of the interesting parts to that is I had never done any sort of sound healing or any sort of chanting or anything like that. So I don't know if it was from her, but years later, maybe, I don't know, 2 years later, I began Sanskrit chanting, and then I do different types of chanting now. I do Kundalini stuff, and but she did the, if you break it down, it was like that, and I heard it. And it was very quick. Like I said, it was the same cadence as I was chanting the Uru's rune.
Yeah.
And then as it ended, she slowed and slowed. So I was able to pick that up. So yeah. I think, now this is just, again, 100% speculation, but I think that sound, and perhaps that sound was healing, was healing type of thing. That, in other words, I'm a big believer in, you know, and sound and chanting and everything. But I wasn't back then. So again, who knows? Mm. But I don't know. I never thought that she was healing me. What I thought is that, as strange as it sounds, that she was like, quote, into the vocalization I was doing.
Yeah. What was the chant itself? I mean, I'm not asking you but what was the meaning of it?
The vocalization was a Celtic thing about either the entry into the earth or, you know, to the tunnel or coming back. I can't remember, but I stopped like midway and I began, this part is interesting. So when I started chanting Uru's, 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 like I said, I had no idea I was going to do that before or don't, but years later, when one of the things that I investigated about Uru's and about runes was that particular rune allowed entry into another dimension.
There we have it. Yes.
I mean, maybe I opened the door for her by doing that. I don't know. But I mean, so many things are like, you know, the Eastern bedroom. She's humming from the Eastern bedroom.
And using air as well, because it's the vocal, you know, the singing, the humming, that's air, right? Which is east.
Right. Yes. Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is related or anything, but the women in my life, the Scottish part, I have a picture downstairs. And it's of my Scottish heritage is Cummins. And and so the Irish thing is this, is that the Irish were booted out of the Highlands, at a certain time, right? And so this would have been my grandmother's mother, Cummins. She lived in Ireland, okay? Pictures of her sitting in a chair. And this is in Ireland, and it was like a little a porch, and, you know, she's just sitting there. And for some reason, I've had this picture for years and years and years, and I'm you know, there's some kind of a connection to it. And what this, I'm sure it doesn't have anything to do with this, but it just seems like women have played significant roles in my life.
Yeah.
And perhaps this was a, you know, whether it was a fae or a woman's spirit or something, the healing aspect, I think there might be something there, but again, I'm not sure. It's all, you know, speculation.
I think it's a really lovely experience. I mean, that chanting and using your voice, especially when it's just an instinctive thing to do, you're just compelled, you were compelled just to do that, just to begin, going off piste and doing your own thing, which I think is really important with ritual. actually. Well, I mean, personally, that's...
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And here's the other thing that harkens back to the Icelandic experience, the control of the mind thing. I would never... I think she was enticing me to come into that bedroom, to open that door so I could have that experience for whatever reason. Because I would have never... I mean, I would have never said, okay, I'm going to break this circle that I was taught and meticulously did and go up just to get the elf skin.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know. I'm not that, I don't, I just seemed like I wasn't something I would do normally. So I think she was sort of controlling that and having me come back to hear that. I don't know. You know what I mean? I think it's hard to piece all these things together where they're, where you say 100%, okay, it's because of this or that, but...
Yeah, we can never know. This is the thing.
We can never know.
We can never know, but I think it's just the feeling. You remember that experience for a reason because it really struck you at a very deep level, and I think that's the importance here. That is the meaning, and that is the thing that you can explore further, just what it meant to you. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can find the answers to it, but you can meditate on that and get back in contact with that and what it meant. Are you sure as well that you didn't lose any time there in the bedroom?
I don't think so. When I opened the door, it just seemed like it was a period when she started humming. It was a period of maybe like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it ended. It didn't seem like, you know, that it was like 3 hours later or something like that.
Yeah. You would have got a sense with the light.
Yeah. My wife was at the store with her daughter, infant. And I think she came back like an hour later. So I didn't get I didn't get that, but I have, believe it or not, I do have a friend who Irish, actually, heritage. He said when he was with his son in Ireland on a trip, he said they were walking, and he said he went into some area, and again, you know, they emerged, and it was like, you know, a couple hours later. He said that was the weirdest thing that ever happened. So,
oh God,
he had that, but I didn't, you know.
They're very common, time slips and trips into the other world. There's actually a lot of people have these experiences. It's interesting. Next, our guest shared a story about a being that appeared in a fire at a gathering held on his property. Join us on Patreon to hear that story and other exclusive bonus content.
So the third thing, okay, Zoom passed, you know, years later. So 4 years ago, we went to Iceland. And, you know, I had always wanted to go to Iceland. And, you know, I love the Viking culture. I have some Viking heritage. But it was, you know, it was just something we wanted to do. So anyway, since that time, you know, that the first thing I became very interested in all sorts of, you know, unexplained phenomena and everything. And one of the things that I was very interested in with Iceland was the Halda folk, the hidden folk.
Yeah.
Okay. So and we stayed in the Viking Hotel, which is, if you ever go to Iceland, definitely stay there because everybody dresses, you know, the hostesses, well, the receptionist and the people behind the counter, all in Viking gear and the hotel, the place next to them is a restaurant. That it looks like something out of Swedish, like Uppsala or something. It's just incredible. But in any event, so I was just enjoying this. But anyway, the thing is, so we had a certain agenda there. We said, okay, we want to go to the Viking Festival. I coordinated with, you know, our trip with that. And we want to see the different things and, you know, in the city, Reykjavik, and all these things. And I wanted to, you know, do the excursion, Thing Valor and all. So I'll just tell you, and by the way, when you see Thing Valor, there's a place where they used to hold the sacrifices down from Thing Valor, where actually, you know, where the chieftains would congregate. And so don't, you know, try to find that. It's actually where they sacrificed the bulls and everything. And even the tour guide didn't know that. Unfortunately, I couldn't have wasn't able to go up on that mound there, but I've taken pictures and I'll send you some. It's incredible. It's the place of ritual is separated by two fissures of water. You know, I mean, it's really must have regarded as a very, very sacred place. And yeah. There's animal bones in one of the fissures, one of the water fissures. So it's really a cool place. But anyway, so we went there, but the excursion that my story happens to take place in, we went to an excursion to, I know I'm pronouncing it wrong, the Snæfellsnes Peninsula.
Okay, yeah.
So on the west coast of Scotland, the western part of there. So anyway, I have to tell you. So at the Viking Hotel, I learned, because I was quizzing people there, especially the owner, about, you know, have you ever heard? And she's, you know, a lot of people really believe in the Hulda folk. So she said, two of the things she said has a real significance to this story as it unfolds. But she said, now, the Hulda folk are shapeshifters. And she said, they also can control your mind. Okay. Mm. Yeah. So anyway, I sort of, you know, took it all in and everything. So we went there on this bus. It seemed like it took 9 hours. We stopped along the way. But anyway, so what we did, we toured different places. And Joe, a lot of these places, they even had a place called the Elf University, which they called it.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Yes. And it's just this incredible rocky outcropping. And it's just monumental. It's just beautiful, beautiful. But anyway, you know, you sort of will. Okay, you know, wow, all right. And so this one place by the Elf University, I'm pretty sure I sent you a number of pictures.
I was just having a look, yeah, because you did send me some pictures. I'll see if I can get those pictures up.
The Elf University is the rocky outcropping that has two towers. I'll call them towers on either side. And then in the middle, it's like a bridge type of a thing. It looks like the beginnings of a real cathedral, but of course it's just you know, rocky outcropping. But anyway, so we toured all around, but we were not too far from there. And we went to a place, and it was a volcano, a non-active volcano. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty sure by the pictures you can see how barren landscape. It's not like there's a Walmart or, you know, or something.
No, it's really...
It's very barren.
Really so amazing landscape.
So the only people there were the people on the bus. And we stopped there and the tour guide said, okay, now I want to go take everybody and we'll go under this this volcano where they, you know, they had this tunnel or something like that. And I didn't know this was going to happen. I'm very claustrophobic. I can't go in certain places.
Yeah.
So I said, and my wife, you know, she said, oh, come on. I said, you know how I am. So she said, okay. So anyway, I stayed on the bus. And when they all left, I thought, well, you know what? I'm gonna journey a little bit. I'm going to look around out here. And on the other side of the road was this, I mean, like a moon landscape. It was all volcanic. A whole volcanic field. But again, this was supposed to be the most heavily populated of the Hulda folk areas. I mean, it was very, you know, I mean, it was an, every place we went, people would talk about the strange things that were happening there and everything. So, you know, I thought this is great. So, as I said, I'm not going to make any bones of it. I was a heathen then. I'm not now, but I was then. Mm-hmm. So that's another story for another time. Anyway, so I got out of the thing. I got out of the bus and I went across the road and I had my my Apple camera, and so I started looking. I mean, there's some really really interesting cavernous openings into the earth. I mean, some of them were really incredible, and there were some areas where I could see. As strange as it sounds, I could see, some sort of, small folk dancing, as strange as that sounds. So,
okay.
At one point, I took out, now I'm about in the middle of this field, taking pictures right and left of videos. And in the middle of this field, I saw one area and it was really, I don't know, again, this could all be my imagination. I mean, but it was, this area. It looked like it was a stone, it was like a shape of an oval. Mm-hmm. And it was right next to this opening in the earth. And I thought, wow, I bet if the Hall of the Folk exists, they would have some sort of, rituals here or something like that. Anyway, so I thought, okay, so I had sage with me. Remember, I'm a heathen. I'm not making any bones about it. And as strange as this sounds, I thought, well, I don't have anything to offer them. So I'm going to offer them this, right? And I put the sage down. I mean, So anyway, then this is where it gets a little weird. And again, this could be part of the imagination, but why I don't think it is what happened later, and it'll unfold. So I got this image in my mind of this woman, and she was like angry, like she had an angry looking face. And she was a little, it was strange. It wasn't, you're the normal woman that women you see. It was just a little strange, but her eyes were glaring and she looked like she was unhappy I was there. Now, this is just an image my mother gave to me, okay?
Yeah.
So at this point, maybe about 5 minutes later, now I'm in this middle of this. I must have been, I don't know, a quarter of a mile away from the bus and all the other, that volcano where everybody's underground.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I looked up and I see two tourists who were not on the bus. And they were, 100% they were not on the bus.
Yeah.
Walking towards me. Okay. Right. Exactly towards me. And I thought, and nothing where I was distinguished by anything. I mean, it all looked the same pretty much,
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm just going to kind of like, just like look around and keep an eye on these people. And so I'd say about maybe 5 minutes passed and they're halfway closer to me. And again, they're a beeline right to me.
Mm.
And I thought, this is a little weird. I mean, cause I couldn't see them up front close at that point, but I could make out their outlines, and they didn't look like anybody on the bus. It wasn't a big bus. I mean, we're talking, it was just a little, kind of a small
bus. Minibus, yeah.
Bus. So anyway, they kept walking. And now here's another thing to keep in mind. I'm not a timid person. I'm a trial attorney. I have to get up and make public speeches all the time at trial. Plus, I boxed all my life and I'm still a level boxer. I boxed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I've been in the ring a number of times. So anyway, I'm not a timid person. But so so this is what happened. So they kept coming up. And so finally I looked at them and I smiled and I said, hi there. Well, it was a older man, maybe a little older than me, and a younger woman. But the younger woman, she had the strangest hair. I mean, it was really, he looked absolutely normal. He had a camera around his neck and, mm-hmm. nothing would distinguish him as anything other than a regular, guy. But she was a little different. She had very strange hair. It was like, and she was an older woman. When I say she was younger than him, she was still in her 50s. She just had, her hair was like a little spiky. And anyway, she had the same, she looked up. Neither of them said hi. I mean, look, we're in the middle of a bobcat lava field.
And they've walked towards you.
And walking right towards me. And when I said hi, they didn't say anything. They just looked at me. And then she glared at me. Okay, that was weird. So then all of a sudden, they just came up maybe about 15 feet from me and then circled to my left. Like they were going around me. Mm. Okay, now here's the part that is really strange to me. I just, at that point, I didn't look around to see where they went.
Yeah.
And I thought, and look, like I said, I wouldn't, I'm not a timid person. And so I felt all I did at that point was I just said, earth, whatever, I don't know. I thought I just started walking back to the bus. And these aren't intimidating people in that, but I just started walking back to the bus and I never looked around to see where they went. which is, to me, it was extremely odd. So I went back and I just sat on the bus, and it was, and I thought, what just happened? You know, what, it didn't make sense.
Yeah. That you'd felt compelled to walk away.
And it didn't, it just, to this day, I kicked myself for not looking back, but I just, it was just so weird. I'm not that kind of a person. I would have looked around and I didn't. So anyway, I don't know what to make of that. But all I can say is this. They were definitely not on the bus. Mm. And no other. And when I went into the area where we parked, where the person parked, there were no other vehicles or anything like that. You know, this is just a barren area.
Yeah. So, I can see with these images.
So I don't know what that was. I guess part of me believes that it was the Halda folk and they had shapeshifted. Mm-hmm. And this is now
it's
what
possible,
this speculation. I think one of the things could be that they were the Halda folk, they had shapeshifted. They didn't like me there. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I had made that offering. Now, again, this is 100% speculation. I had made the offering. So they just kind of wanted to, you know, check me out.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, this is a guy, what is he doing? And so I think that's what, part of me really believes that. But I just feel that the reason that they weren't people, okay, is because, number one, where did they come from? I mean, they did not come from the bus, and that was the only vehicle in the area. Mm. And Joe, you've seen those pictures. There were no houses. It's not like
that. No, it's just in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so where did they come from? And yet they look like they hop right off of a
tourist bus
or something. Yeah. So it was, and then the third thing that really was weird was, you know, if you were, say all that, say they were in another bus, say they, you know, everything was fine, they were people, why would they, make a beeline? And I say that because it wasn't any, there's nothing to distinguish the area I was, but they came straight for me quarter of a mile. It's like, so I just thought that was extremely strange. And then my reaction, not even to look where they went. Come on, you know. Anyway, I'm just befuddled to this day. And I part of me does believe that I think what I was witnessing was a Halda folk, and they just, wanted me to see them and check me out, but let me know that I wasn't welcome in that area. You know?
Yeah. I think you've got to open to that intuitive sense of what happened, because you are the one that was there and you're the one who had that encounter. And I think, it's so strange. But strange things happen to people.
Yeah.
And we're not always going to find the answers, from thinking about it in a rational sense. But you're right that they're heading straight for you. I think it's interesting that you noticed something strange about her hair, because the thing is with people, when they're not actually people and they are from another world, there's something not quite right about the way that they look. And that, humans are humans and we all look really different.
Right.
And, but there is just, it's an inner sense when you see someone, you're close to someone, you just know that they're actually not of this world. And I know I've experienced that. I know lots of other people who have said that they've experienced that as well. It's like they're trying to be a human, but they haven't quite got there's something that they haven't quite got right.
Yeah.
You can't quite put your finger on. So what was her hair like then? Did you say it was the,
it was black and it was, now I'm thinking back five or 4 years ago, but it just seemed it was like spiky. It had like some spike in it, it just didn't look normal. Everybody's different, but
there was something about her. Yeah.
And what got me too was she had a frown on her face looking at me when why? And you would think, if you've ever been in a rural area and humans come up there, naturally they say, they greet each other, and they didn't do that at all. Nothing, not at one little nothing. And that, you know, again, that image that I saw of that woman glaring, you know, it just, I don't know.
A premonition of it before, before she turned up. So you got the image, you got the message already, but you stayed there. And then they kind of came to like, go, right, come on, get out of it.
Because I mean, and I was, you know, I mean, I was walking all over that area. I was fascinated by the apertures into the earth and the different rocky outcroppings.
Yeah, it looks incredible.
I had been, I could still see, I think one of those pictures you can still see in the foreground, you know, far off the Elk University. So I thought, hey, this might be an area where, you know, I should take some pictures and things. And so anyway, but like I said, that wasn't something I was expecting at all.
You said that you felt, you know, as they were approaching, you already kind of got a sense from them before they had even got close to you. Can you remember what that sense was? Or perhaps it's too long ago.
I just felt something. I don't want to go as far as to say ominous or anything like that, but I just felt uncomfortable. A little uncomfortable. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm a very confident guy. But I just and they didn't, you know, they weren't, like I said, you know, they didn't, you know, have guns or any, you know, that kind of thing. So I wasn't, it was just something uncomfortable.
And she then, held your gaze. Did he?
He didn't, he just looked at me and looked, his eyes went down and didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But he looked absolutely normal, like somebody you'd run into in the street, and he had, you know, had a camera around his neck. The absolute, you know, tourist. I mean, he looked just your average, you know, garden variety tourist. But but you know, I always think now, I don't think even with in Iceland, because you know they're different, of course, than Americans. But my experience has always been when I'm in a rural area, the people are more friendly because it's only you and them, and you're expected to have certain social
niceties. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so they, like I said, they came within. Oh boy, it was at least 15 feet. I mean, I couldn't reach out and touch them, but I mean, I could see that, you know everything. They were 15 feet away, so. And I, you know, I said hi, and nothing. And I thought it just didn't. That something's not right, you know. I mean, it's just. I mean, to come that close to you, I could see if they were maybe they were shy people, and they came. You know, they were like on the other side of the field, and you know, I waved, and they didn't. But to come up right up to you, and then you say hi, and they just don't say anything. I mean,
yeah, it's quite strange.
It was really strange. So
So when you got back to the bus, did you kind of look around to see if you could see them still?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No. And see, here's the thing. I not only didn't I do that, but I just felt very cowed, if that's the right word. I just felt like I don't know. I mean, I was like, it just took me some moments when I got back to regroup. And you know, when my wife got on the bus with everybody else, I told her of my experience. And I have to, you know, my wife's a lovely person. I love her more than anybody in the world. But she just like shrugged it off, kind of a thing. So really, I didn't, I wasn't able to talk to anybody at length until I got back and had a real close friend I told about, and I think I told my son, but it was really I can tell you, it was the absolute strangest experience I've ever had.
Yeah,
I mean, even as a child, I've had some things, but nothing like that was really weird.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I don't know if there's any kind of folklore surrounding fairies and sage. I'm thinking about the fact that you left some sage, and what I do know about sage is that it's a cleanser, obviously. It's a, if you're going to sage your house or any kind of sacred space, then it just cleanses that area and removes any sort of unwanted spirits or energies that are lying around. And I just wonder whether that they took offense in some way or whether sage...
Oh, right. I never thought of that. See, that's the only thing I had. I was just offering it as a gift, you know.
Of course.
Thought, hey, but maybe they did. Maybe I like ruined some kind of a thing they had.
And they're like, okay, sage to us means, yeah, get out of here.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they're like, hang on, you get out of here.
I never thought of that. Oh, geez.
That's the only thing that occurs to me.
Yeah.
And it's not something I thought about before.
Yeah, that's a good point. That could have been. Maybe that was something that they resented, that, you know, that I was
you
trying to expel
sage.
Them or something. That's the first time I thought about that since, I mean
it's... Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just repeating myself. I just thought it was, like I said, I didn't have anything. And I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
Obviously, I carry it for protection. I do. But I just wanted to, at the time, I didn't have anything. And I thought, hey, and I even, it, my intention, you know, I'm offering this, you know, for.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with what you're saying there, because this is the thing with offerings. I believe that you would offer something, and if it's offered from the heart, then I think that's the most important thing, is that it's offered with good intention. So although I'm saying, well, you know, was it the sage? I'm kind of saying that sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek,
well,
really.
It could have actually been based on their reaction. I mean, because I had read about the Hall of Folk and even before I went to Iceland, and one of the things that they did is they actually helped, helped a guy, a famous engineer who was trapped in the ice in like the 20s. And this person said, recounted that here I was trapped in the ice and I was going to die. And this beautiful woman, much larger than a regular human, mm-hmm. Came in and helped me up. And she was like, you know, luminance, beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know,
beautiful.
but then I've also heard, and this guy, I attended a lecture and he was talking about different phenomena, and he was a psychologist, and he prefaced his remarks by saying, what I'm about to tell you, I would usually sign commitment papers of people who would say this.
Yeah.
You know, it's a joke.
Yeah.
And he said that during the Reykjavik arms talks in the 80s with Reagan, and I can't remember if it was Gorbachev or one of them, but he said that they did a poll of the Icelanders, and he said they asked the Icelanders, do you believe in trolls? And, you know, the press was like tongue-in-cheek, you know, kind of a thing. And But believe it or not, like the Icelanders came back, I think it was 70% or more of them said they absolutely did, and a significant number said they'd actually seen them.
Yes.
So it may just be an island that, whether the Vikings brought this or it was there before, I don't know.
So you didn't manage to get inside any of those caverns on the landscape?
No. I thought, now, you know what? That's interesting because, you know, friends have said, hey, well, I said, look, there's no way I would, there was something like, do not, and, you know, maybe it was just, you know, a fear or something like that. Maybe it had to do with my claustrophobia, but there was nothing that enticed me about going inside those.
No, you weren't going to take any chances.
I wasn't going to take any chances. No.
Especially on your own while they're all off on their tour. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Whatever happened to Mike? Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, well, lose some, you know.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't have any inclination to go in. But I, you know, like I said, it was just it's a magical place. If you ever go there, you really you know, even the beach area on the West Coast or that Western area is just at night, you know, it's a different experience. And like I said, a lot of the Hall of Folk lore and a lot of other different phenomenon happen on the West Coast, and I can say why. I can understand why, because it's a really I'll use the word, it's a very haunting landscape. I've sent you some pictures. You know, it's very
They're really wonderful.
They're beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful area, but I think at night, if you were by yourself, I think it might.
Yes. Well, don't forget the Burren in Ireland, another really kind of similar sort of moonscape landscape.
Right, right.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's been really nice to chat to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Yeah, well, keep me informed on your travels.
I will, absolutely. And definitely see Iceland at some point. I'm glad. It's worth it.
Thanks very much to our guest for sharing his personal experiences with us. His encounter with the couple in Iceland may be a leap for some listeners to accept. However, you do know when there's something that's not quite right, and it's very hard to capture that if you haven't experienced it yourself. Here's a similar story from the Fairy Investigation Society's Fairy Census that is still running online, collecting experiences, and I will link this in the show notes. This took place in France, in the Ardèche, in the 2010s. It was reported by a male English tourist in France. The beings that I saw appeared to be fell walkers. They wore walking gear. They had knapsacks, but their knapsacks seemed to be empty. They carried no bottles of water. There were about 15 to 20 of them. I had just pushed my bike up a mountain, and I was sitting on the grass at the top of it. They appeared, walking down from a path above me, and stood around me in a circle, chattering and laughing, ignoring me as I sat in the centre of them, behaving in a way, as a friend who lives in France commented, that no French person would. The French would never do that. I chatted to three of the group in broken French. First, a man who seemed to be their leader, the dominant male. Then a taciturn and sad-looking man. And finally, a woman. At that time, I was on a spiritual quest that has been ongoing for about 20 years. I felt that they were there to support me and to prove to me that my quest was not a fatuous one. One of them, the woman, came over to me and took from me a possession that I carry that has tremendous spiritual significance for me. I was still sitting down. She stood over me. She had the strongest, most muscular legs I have ever seen, but in proportion. They were not grossly muscular. They looked like ordinary legs, but I doubt they were. They were the legs of someone who has walked everywhere on every day of her life. This may seem preposterous, but I cannot stress enough the significance of her clearly not human legs. It was one of the things that truly made me realise I was with people who were not people. She took the possession I carry, that has tremendous spiritual significance, said its name, and then kissed it. At which point, as if their mission was over, the group turned and walked away. After they had gone, I came back to this reality, realising that I had been outside of time. A state that I have experienced before, always while undergoing unusual and significant events of a spiritual nature. When the group left me, they were chattering and laughing. I heard them doing so as they turned a corner and left my sight. Scarcely less than 10 seconds after they had gone, and realizing that something truly strange had occurred, I got up and followed them. I turned the same corner. There was no sight of them. They had vanished. It's interesting to note that the walker in this story was on his own spiritual quest, as was the guest in this episode. Evolving as a spiritual human being is a decision made at a deep level, and once you start to make those first steps, it's quite a wonder how things start to fall into place. The people you meet and situations that arise. These moments are often hard for other people to understand looking from the outside, But from the individual, they are momentous and strike a chord. They are unmistakable and often herald new beginnings and transformations. I also love to hear how people find their means of connection with Source. It's often something you love doing. In the example I've just shared, it sounds like the man loved walking and being in nature. So it's interesting that he met an otherworldly being whose physical appearance gave him the impression that she had walked every day of her life. In our guest's case, it was chanting, and his deep connection with Source was a woman's voice. People often spend years trying different techniques for spiritual connection, and it's fun to play with various methods along the way, using crystals, energy medicines, tarot, scrying, lucid dreaming. I always find it fascinating that individuals have a strong recognition when they've found the correct one for them. It's like trying something on that fits perfectly. And this can often be a trigger to important transitions and self-inquiry in their life. Quite simply, when you find the right medium, these methods can be life-changing. Lots of people are reporting that it's much easier to connect with otherworldly beings at this time. I have spoken about the liminality of the last 5 years, and it does appear to be continuing, and if anything, deepening. We do not know what lies on the other side, and we're certainly not there yet, but what we can do is use our imaginings to create a better world. The unknown often makes people feel afraid, but in fact it's a powerful act to make an intention, step forward, and trust. If there are beings walking this earth that are not human, and if it is true that there is a greater connection with the unseen at present, then I like to think that for the most part they are here to help us at this time. Perhaps that's why the world of the Fae appear to be asking to be recognised. I hold no answers whatsoever, but I can share how it feels for me, and I can offer a place for people's stories to be spoken and heard. Thank you for listening. Please share these stories with others who need to hear them. Stay true to yourself, especially at this time, and always remain curious.